This is GKW. Welcome to another edition of Good Karma Wrestling. I'm Gabe Neitzel from ESPN Milwaukee. No Brian Rowitz this week, but of course we still have our guy from ESPN 1000 in Chicago as well as part of the team that brings you SiriusXM Pro Wrestling Nation every Sunday from 9 a.m. until noon Eastern time. He is Jonathan Hood. We've got Redemption coming up this weekend for AEW. And again, you can always comment, subscribe, make sure you hit us up, youtube.com/@goodkarmawrestling. But with AEW and Redemption coming up this weekend, which I guess I kind of forgot about, it was this weekend, but it makes sense because 2 weekends from now is SummerSlam. They're not going to want to do that. And then shortly after that, we have All In. So the question becomes for AEW, and I feel like we don't ask this question a lot because AEW, at least as they've continued to grow, they used to be, it seemed a little more careful with their pay-per-views, but now Redemption is coming our way this weekend. And it's right before we've got a big show at Wembley in London, Jay Hood. So we start today by asking, is Redemption a skippable show?
It is a skippable show. And it starts with Kenny Omega against Kevin Knight. Let's just start here. If Kevin Knight was the TNT champion, do you think that would increase his chances of beating Kenny Omega for the title?
No, I mean, the chances of him winning are 0% whether he's the TNT champ or not.
Well, that's the point. The point is to have someone that's on the rise that is supposed to be the number one contender, I guess, for the world's championship, and you put him in a match against Kenny Omega. The match is going to slap. It's going to be a great match, but Kevin Knight's going to lose. And the point is that everyone's just looking forward to Wembley. It is.
Yeah.
This is a YouTube special. This doesn't have to be a pay-per-view. To imagine us paying $50 for this event when you know that the next event is bigger. So that's what makes it skippable.
I guess the only thing – so I guess I'll get this out of the way because we say this about every AEW pay-per-view. The wrestling's going to be great. But the wrestling's great for AEW no matter what. And especially with what they've been giving us on Collision and Dynamite. Like, I don't know, like, Chris Jericho as the Painmaker versus Tommaso Ciampa. Is that going to be good? Sure, but, like, it could be on Collision. And you're going to get the same match. Cajun Culp versus Death Riders. Yeah, it'll be a fun match. I guess the only thing I guess I have a question about, because I don't see, as I look up and down this card, and they've got a lot of the championships on the line with 10 of the matches that they've put together. They've got a ladder match in there where someone's going to get an international championship match after they win. The only one I guess I have a question about and that might make it not skippable is Tekla versus Willow. Mm-hmm. Because Willow was supposed to be, by all reports, the winner of the women's side of the Owen Hart tournament. And she was supposed to go on to have an AEW Women's Championship match in Wembley at this show. So do they pull the trigger? What is a bigger match for Wembley? Is it Mercedes Moné versus Tekla? Or is it Mercedes Moné versus Willow? And I think it's probably Mercedes versus Willow. So I give, of all the other matches, it doesn't seem like Mark Davis, I mean, I guess maybe Davis drops the national championship to Idolo. I don't care. It's one of those championships I just don't care about in AEW because they have too many. Is Fletcher going to drop the international championship to Bandido? No, he is not. So I guess I look at that one as championships of significance. Like Willow could win that over Tekla, giving us a Willow versus Mercedes build going into Wembley.
Yeah, it's the latter. To answer the question, yeah, Willow and Mercedes has been a long-time battle for a while. They have a personal rivalry. They have an interest. So I think that that'd be the matchup. But I'm going to do two things. I'm going to fill in the gaps with two things. One is that this PLE, this pay-per-view, is going to be in Montreal. Imagine the redemption for Kenny Omega to win the championship in Canada where he's from. No, you did it in Clearwater, Florida. Okay. And again, we don't know if MJF's leg or his knee was 100% and he had to drop the title. But if you were going to do it, you could have done it in Montreal, in the country that Kenny Omega's from. They didn't do that. Second thing is that, you know, with this pay-per-view, if this was WWE, there'd be a special kind of event. Like, for instance, there's Royal Rumble and then Elimination Chamber and then WrestleMania. That's how it usually goes, right?
Mm-hmm.
This pay-per-view is not one of those special things where, well, it's a big cage or it's something kind of crazy. You got to watch it. It's just matches. And that's the difference between the WWE going Royal Rumble, Elimination Chamber, WrestleMania to what we saw before Redemption, and then All In. And so, listen, these matches are going to be really good to great. We know that. But ultimately, it's about story and it's about stakes. And I just think that this pay-per-view, they made it skippable because we're looking so forward to what happens at Wembley. We are just waiting for the coronation of Will Ospreay to be the champion.
Well, and I mean, last night, yeah, I guess Kevin Knight ends up standing tall at the end of the show, you know, getting one over Kenny at the end of the show. But that just felt like it was forced in because he had nothing to do with the actual main event and the match that was going on. And, you know, Kenny and doing the old trope, can everyone coexist with Mox and Kenny and Ospreay in a six-man tag? And that tension certainly more interesting than, because with Kevin Knight coming in at the end and just like when chaos reigns and then he's able to get one over on Kenny, it's just like, oh yeah, by the way, I know you're really looking forward to this, but don't forget, we've got a pay-per-view coming up this weekend. It's like, yeah, I feel like I can forget it. Because and for whatever reason, AEW, I feel like we talk about this every year, Jay Hood, they haven't figured out the gap to what you were just talking about, where WWE knows what they're doing on the road to WrestleMania. And they've called it the road to WrestleMania. They know they're building toward Mania, and they know it's awkward and can be awkward between the Royal Rumble and Mania and trying to bridge that gap. And they figured that out. For the most part, it still can be awkward from time to time, but for the most part, they kind of have a blueprint of how they want to do it. AEW hasn't quite figured out how to get from Double or Nothing to All In. Because Double or Nothing is still one of the pillar shows, I guess, right? It's not as big as, you know, for WWE, we talk about it. It's SummerSlam, it's Royal Rumble, it's used to be Survivor Series. I don't know if it really is anymore. Money in the Bank. Like, those are the big ones where a lot of things can happen. And Mania is obviously the crown jewel. All In has become the crown jewel for AEW. That's their biggest show. They've run it at Wembley. When they didn't run it at Wembley, they did it here in a baseball stadium. It's their biggest show of the year. And Double or Nothing is still one of those pillar shows because it was one of the original shows. They just haven't figured out how to bridge the gap between Double or Nothing and All In. They sprinkle in, you know, Forbidden Door, which wasn't so forbidden this year with the lack of other performers from other companies. So just that kind of feels like a little bit of a waste. Same thing with Redemption. There's just, you're just treading water, and we all know you're treading water in order to get to the big show that everybody's actually looking forward to. So I appreciate you trying to make this matter with, you know, oh, we've got a six-man ladder match with an international. Well, when you have so many secondary titles, I don't care if he's getting, you know, if whoever wins that match gets a shot at an international title. I guess it would be at Wembley. But, AEW and these pay-per-views, while I know they're going to be entertaining, if you like watching, you know, wrestling in your wrestling shows, they're going to be great. It's not driving anything forward. It's just kind of keeping us in the same place until we get to the show everybody's actually looking forward to.
Well, listen, I mean, beggars can't be choosers. After WCW closed, we had WWE and nothing else, and then TNA came on after that. The thing that we wanted as wrestling fans is wrestling. We want to be able to get wrestling.
Danny, or is he?
That'll be fine.
I'm not going to say anything. I'm just saying we'll give away a pair.
Board here.
There we go.
Sometime today, we're giving away a pair.
There we go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nope.
Wrong one.
So
anyway.
So I'll just tell you this. I just think that when it comes to the wrestling that we watch, we always want to have the end ring. It had to be quality. We wanted the ring. And so we get that with AEW.
Yeah. Well, no, we get that great. It's And look, when I run down the matches that are going to be coming up here at Redemption, again, they're going to be fun. That six-man ladder match is going to be fun. They just added a tag team match with the Bang Bang Gang and the Dons. It's going to be fun. Hikaru Shida versus Maya World. Yes, going to be fun. Mox Ospreay versus the Young Bucks. Like, these are going to be really good matches. I mean, the one that actually probably steals the show very well could be Mark Davis versus Idola. Like, that one could steal the show, and it's going to be a lot of fun. But AEW... And I don't think they want to veer too far into that. I think AEW is at their best when they are an alternative to WWE, and they're not going to want to swerve into what we just saw at, you know, Saturday night's main event for WWE. We've got all these celebrity run-ins, and now you've got a Tom Brady thing going on in WWE where he's obviously building something. So you still want to stay true to that wrestling, but you still do need stories. And AEW's done a better job of telling those stories and making stories. But the problem is the stories they're telling right now are stories for Wembley.
Yes.
And that makes this not that much different. It's just going to be an extended Collision or Dynamite, right? Because, I mean, you could get a lot of these matches, and I still get to see wrestling on Collision and Dynamite every week. There's no difference because the stakes just don't exist going into this, because the stories that I enjoy are stories for Wembley, and they just haven't figured out how to make that balance yet.
No, you're right about that. You're right about that. The thing about AEW is that we will see redemption, we'll see all these great matches, and they will kind of mirror everything else we see in AEW. That's the whole thing. Like, this becomes a skippable show. This is great for Kenny. I think if nothing else, it's great for Kenny because he's in his home country. He'll defend the championship, and I think it'll be his last heavyweight championship in AEW. I think this is the coronation of, hey, you got your championship matchup. You're going to beat Kevin Knight. It's going to be a great match. But the thing is that we always see great matches, and there's nothing wrong with that. I never will turn a blind eye to great matches. But what I'm saying is that I got to pay $50 for it more than I pay Netflix. There's a problem. That's a problem, right? You want me to pay $50+ for a pay-per-view that's skippable. Meanwhile, if it was on Netflix, it's just part of my bill.
Yeah, I guess I'm old enough. I'm old enough, Jay Hood, to remember when AEW was like, "Oh, we're not going to be running pay-per-views every month." I'm old enough to remember when that was part of the business plan, when they were just going to keep the pay-per-views special. And in professional wrestling, look, I get it, right? They're able to generate revenue, they're able to make money off of it, and at the end of the day, it's still a business, and that's what you got to do. But we talk about it all the time at WWE. They have skippable PLEs all the time, and AEW, because they used to keep the pay-per-views rare, none of them were really that skippable. But now, when you're running one every month, that's what happens. Yes, you're going to make more money, but ultimately, some are going to become skippable and not worth my $50.
Yeah, you water down your product that way.
Yeah, and I think that's just kind of where we're at. But we are building, obviously, towards SummerSlam as well. In WWE, that's where we begin the three count, the other top three stories in the world of professional wrestling. And earlier this week, me and Brian Roach, we had an opportunity to catch up with the WWE U.S. Women's Champ. It is Tiffy time right now here on GKW as we talked with Tiffany Stratton.
I'll step out.
Excited to bring on our next guest because, well, we got a lot of wrestling to talk about because Friday Night SmackDown coming to Green Bay July 31st. She's going to be a part of that along with the U.S. Women's Championship. Of course, this all right before we hit SummerSlam as well. She is Tiffany Stratton. Tiffany, thank you so much for the time. How's it going?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
I mean, I'm doing fantastic. Excited for SummerSlam, certainly. So let's go ahead and start there. What do you have to do to mentally prepare yourself to be in a ladder match like the one you are going to be in?
You know, I don't feel like it's so much mental. Maybe it is a little bit of mental. I mean, there are ladders involved. However, I think a lot of it is more physical. Nothing truly can prepare you, I feel like, for a ladder match. The only preparation you can have is having former ladder matches. So I have a couple of those underneath my belt. I have the NXT ladder match that I participated in, I think back in 2022. And then I have the Money in the Bank ladder match that I was in for Money in the Bank. And I came out victorious in that match. That's where I won my Money in the Bank briefcase. So I think I have pretty high chances of coming out victorious.
When you look at this women's locker room and the competition, how do you guys push each other week in and week out to continue to up your game?
I feel like everybody is on the top of their game right now. And I feel like just that alone pushes everybody to be better. You know, if somebody just had a really good segment or a really good match, like that makes you want to go and have an even better segment or an even better match. So I think naturally we all just kind of, we're competitive, you know, it's a locker room at the end of the day, like, it's not a team sport. It's an individual sport. So everyone's going to go out there and do things to the best of their ability. At least I am. So when a girl goes and she delivers perfectly in a match, that makes me want to go deliver very well in my matches. So
as you take a step back and look at the locker room as a whole, what would you say is the state of the WWE women's division right now?
I think the state of the women's division right now is they've never been better. I feel like the women are doing so well right now. Between all rosters, I feel like we have the best roster in the entire world. Even down in NXT, like some of those girls are better than some of our main roster girls. So, yeah, I just think through and through, we are all very good in-ring workers, and I'm excited for the future. I think the future is in very good hands.
Someone you're alongside, Chelsea Green, a friend of this show. We talk about ladder bumps. She might have one of the most memorable over the last decade or so. How underrated is someone like Chelsea Green, and how does she help elevate you?
Oh, I love working with Chelsea Green. She is somebody that makes the most out of any segment, any match, any segment. She's gonna make her TV time worthwhile. Yeah, I love being paired with Chelsea. I think there was a little bit of hesitation there because I felt like for the past year, it kind of felt like she would kick me when I was down. She wasn't really ever wanting to be my friend, you know, and then all of a sudden she wants to be besties with me. So I was a little hesitant at first. And I think now she's kind of won me over a little bit. I'm coming around. I really enjoy being with her. Working with her, talking with her. Very, very interesting person. I love her.
Again, SmackDown coming to Green Bay Friday night, July 31st. Make sure you get your tickets up there in Green Bay. Who are some other women that you take a look at on the roster that either you want to work with again or want a chance to work with for the first time and get a real good story going?
Oh, I would love to work with Rhea Ripley. I think this interim women's championship match is like the perfect segue into it. So I feel like, you know, me being Tiffany Stratton and then winning that title and becoming Tiffy two titles. And then, you know, if Rhea wants a match to try and win back her WWE Women's Championship, try and win back, she can. I will give her that. I think that would just be the perfect segue to a me and Rhea Ripley story.
We talk to a lot of wrestlers, and the first time they tell their family they're going into this wacky world of wrestling, it's usually met with mixed reaction. For you, correct me if I'm wrong, your family was the opposite, and they were sort of pushing you towards wrestling. What was that discussion like the first time it came up?
Yeah, so I've told this story so many times. So me and my family, we're all sitting on the couch, flipping through the channels, and SmackDown was on. And my mom saw Charlotte Flair, and she was like, you can totally do something like that. Like, you do that every day. And I was a gymnast at the time. So all the flips and all the stuff that she was doing in the ring, like, I was doing at gymnastics practice, like 20 times a day. So I told my mom, yeah, not right now. I'm going to go to the Olympics first. Eventually, I ended up quitting gymnastics, and I researched my nearest pro wrestling school, and Mr. Kennedy's school came up. So I decided to sign up for classes, and I had my mom come with me for the first set of classes, because it was in kind of a bad part of Minneapolis. So I had my mom come with me. I was the only girl there, very nerve-wracking at first, especially because I've never done anything like this. I really didn't know much about the business at all. So I went in there and I joined one of their classes, and the rest is history.
So as somebody who, again, didn't necessarily grow up with professional wrestling and then kind of found the love for it that you have later in life than some other people, what has been your favorite thing about being a pro wrestler?
My favorite thing about being a pro wrestler, I would have to say probably the traveling. And that's also my least favorite part, actually. So
a little give and take there, sure.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So the traveling and getting to see all the different countries and going on these amazing tours in Japan and Mexico and in the UK. So I would have to say the traveling for sure.
From a mental standpoint, how do you roll with some of the punches of feedback and criticism, and whether it's a lighthearted thing like opening cards or just in-ring stuff, how do you roll with stuff like that?
I feel like I'm a public figure, so I have to expect, you know, the hate, the criticism. But sometimes, like, I do take into what people say, and I do take that in and see if I can apply it anywhere. And just having good discernment when it comes to hate and love, you know, if you believe all the good stuff about yourself, you have to believe all the bad stuff. But I just think having good discernment and having a good sense of self has truly saved me, because I know who I am. I know I'm a good person at the end of the day, and I have good morals, and I love my life. So, I don't think it really affects me that much.
The new season of Unreal is now out on Netflix. I feel like it's kind of polarizing, even with the performers within WWE. Some people don't like, the company allowing a kind of peek behind the curtain that show allows. Where do you come down? Are you a fan of Unreal, or do you kind of wish some of it was still a mystery?
No, I love it. I love Unreal. I feel like it gives the chance for fans to see a different side of wrestling that they've never seen before. And I feel like a lot of those people are saying those things, but they're also watching it at the same time. They're also tuning in. So I'm a big fan of reality TV. Obviously, I'm a young 27-year-old girl. So I love reality TV. And I do think this is like a very good thing for WWE, because I think it kind of having it be on Netflix and having, like people that aren't wrestling fans see that, I think it's very it's good advertising for wrestling. You click on that, you get to see the behind the scenes. You don't really get told like this is super fake or this isn't real. It's kind of like it's very real what's going on. So I think that's very interesting for people that aren't wrestling fans to kind of see that side of things and then hopefully become a fan from watching that.
You've accomplished so much in your young career already. What's been sort of your biggest pinch me moment so far of your career?
My pinch me moment. That's a good question. I feel like I've had a lot of those. My pinch me moment, I would have to say, was my WrestleMania debut. That against Charlotte Flair, like that was a dream match of mine. And to have it be at my first ever WrestleMania was such an amazing moment for me. My family was there, it was in Las Vegas. So all of the kind of cards were in my favor that day. So very surreal moment for me.
What is your favorite match you have ever seen, and what's the best match you've ever been in?
My favorite match I've ever seen was Rhea Ripley versus Charlotte Flair at WrestleMania. That was like my first year in wrestling. My first year that I felt like that I could potentially be a main roster talent. So seeing that match, and I was there in Vegas or in California when I saw that match playing. So I saw that and I thought that match was so sick. And I thought, like, wow, I want to be doing that one day. And as far as my favorite match, I would have to say my match against Becky Lynch at No Mercy, my Extreme Rules match. That was definitely a match that put me on the map and kind of changed my career. I felt like, maybe Hunter saw something in me when he saw that match. And I felt like the fans definitely saw kind of me step up to the plate when they saw that match. So, that's one of my favorite matches for sure.
We talk about young talent breaking onto the scene in WWE and being next to carry the legacy. Someone like Obafemi that you have spent time with, what is the future for someone like him? And for you, what's it like watching a giant of a man like Obafemi?
Oh my gosh, I get goosebumps watching his entrance. He has probably the coolest entrance right now in WWE. And then like going into his music is so cool. Like it's so fun to watch, like especially as somebody that is in the business. So I think the sky is the limit for him. He's already beat Brock Lesnar. They're going to try and settle the scores here at SummerSlam. So I'm excited to see that match as a fan, So like I said, the sky is the limit for him. I'm excited for him.
Well, so again, speaking of him, he's got the Hell in a Cell match. So you've been in the ladder matches. You mentioned the Extreme Rules match that you had. Hell in a Cell, is that something that's on the Tiffany Stratton bucket list?
Of course, all of these gimmick matches are on my bucket list. These are kind of my forte. I don't know if you guys know that, but this is kind of like my thing. I love gimmick matches. I would love to be in a Hell in a Cell match.
And then, after, like Gabe mentioned, SummerSlam coming up, being in Minnesota, what's that going to mean to you, being home for SummerSlam?
Ooh, this is like my first, I feel like, big moment in Minnesota. I had a SmackDown late last year, I think it was something for qualifying for the U.S. Championship, actually. And I lost, but what a full circle moment. I now have the U.S. Championship. I'm going into SummerSlam in Minnesota as the U.S. champion. So I'm super excited. I feel like this adds a little bit of pressure, but it's also going to be a little bit more fun for me. You know, my family's going to be there. I'm going to have family that have never seen me wrestle before there. So I'm super excited.
Well, if you got family there that you know, I'm not going to ask you what you got planned, but I'm guessing you're going to have something pretty crazy planned for a ladder match. You got to show off in front of the friends and family, right?
Of course. Of course. Like I said, there's family members that have never even seen me wrestle. So for them to be able to see me in a ladder match, like I have to show out, you know?
No doubt. To. Absolutely. Yeah. And Tiffany, thank you so much for the time. We know you're busy. We appreciate it. Enjoy Green Bay again. Friday night SmackDown coming to Green Bay, Resch Center, July 31st. Check that out wherever you get your tickets. And best of luck in the ladder match coming up the following weekend. Right after that, SummerSlam up in Minnesota.
Yes. Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
Tiffany Stratton joining us here on GKW. And again, SmackDown coming to Green Bay Friday night. I know usually Green Bay is a Raw town, but they're coming with SmackDown right before SummerSlam kicks off in Minneapolis.
Interesting interview. First of all, it is the first mobile interview that we've had. Mobile. She's in the back of a car, and she's got the phone or the camera set up so that way whoever's driving 65 miles an hour, she was had a time for us while she was in the back seat. The other thing is, very clandestine, a Brian Rowitz, who will usually ask the tough question, kind of talked about her not knowing who Sergeant Slaughter was, SGT Slaughter. But very, very sneaky on the hater question.
The SGT Slaughter. Again, get your tickets, head to SmackDown, Green Bay, my neck of the woods, just a couple of hours north of Milwaukee, coming up on July 31st. We move on to number two here this week on GKW. And, well, Danhausen, apparently a bit of a polarizing figure now in WWE. Dave Meltzer earlier this week saying that Danhausen, it's just too much Danhausen right now in WWE between everything that happened at Saturday night's main events, now into Monday Night Raw, being featured in multiple segments on Raw. So the question we go to now is Danhausen being overused by WWE?
Just like Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns and LA Knight, you mean?
I mean, you
know what I'm saying by that, right?
Oh, 100%.
Okay, so here's a guy here that's top, one of the top merch guys.
Mm-hmm.
The man, he's doing all... He's in the fillings of your teeth. He's everywhere, right? He's everywhere, Dan.
Yep.
And so it's just like you're striking while the iron's hot. If people want to see Danhausen, sure. Four segments on Raw, probably not, because that's what we got, four segments. But no, it's not overuse of Danhausen, because the kids and the adults both want to see him. Meltzer's just old and crabby. That's what it is. He's not going to be in Tokyo for a five-star match, so he doesn't want to see Danhausen. And I think it's great for Danhausen. I'm happy for him that he's in such high demand. He's been in the company, 5 months? And people want him on every show? It's great for him.
With by the way, what, the worst debut since the gobbledygooker? Like, it was a terrible debut. But yep. He was getting booed during his debut when he came out. And for him to be... I mean, first and foremost, for him to be the one that uncursed the Knicks, right? Yeah. Like you knew you were going to get a lot of Danhausen at MSG just with his connection with the Knicks, the run, everything he did on ESPN with Stephen A. Smith. Like, okay, is four segments a little much on Monday Night Raw? Yeah, that's a little much. But if that was happening for a month straight where he's getting four segments, okay, maybe he's being overused. But whatever, he was used for four segments. He was prominently featured at MSG, which he was going to be. You mentioned how much merch he's moving. And WWE is now what WWE likes to do in this holding pattern of, okay, we've got our matches set. We're building towards SummerSlam, but we also don't want anyone to get hurt, right? We don't want Roman. We don't want Punk, Cody, all these guys. And women too, which, by the way, like no standalone women segments on a Monday Night Raw, which was interesting. But they don't want any of these people to get hurt. Any of these prominently featured people to get hurt because they want the card to main intact for their two-night SummerSlam coming up in just a couple of weeks. So somebody like Danhausen is going to get featured, and why not? As much as people love him, I'm 100% with you here. I don't think he's being overused. I think they are using him pretty much the right amount, where he gets his backstage segment. Every once in a while he comes out, he gets his matches, and everybody's just having fun. There's nothing wrong with somebody like Danhausen being featured. This is Danhausen finding a role inside WWE. Reminds me of when Bryan Danielson was in WWE and he talked about, yeah, we've got Big Show, we've got me. I mean, this is how the circus works. We can have so many different performers to try to reach as many different people as possible. Yeah, maybe Danhausen isn't everybody's cup of tea, but he's popular enough where he should be featured as much as he typically is on any given Raw, SmackDown, or PLE.
Fans want it. You don't turn a blind eye to it. Now, there is a philosophy of giving them less so the audience wants more. Like, oh, we want more Danhausen. You could do it that way, too, but I think that WWE is doing it the right way. I mean, I think the story is great for him. Gabe, I just think it's great that here's a guy here that was underutilized in AEW, where it didn't even see, he'd be there for one show and then you wouldn't see him for 3 months. He's doing the same stuff, some of the same stuff he did on the indies. And that's why I like his timeline, because there's these indie workers that go, you know, a year ago I was working with Danhausen. He's doing the same things. I'm so happy for him. Like, Frank the Clown, like this, he's a indie worker in the Midwest. He works in Milwaukee, works in Chicago, and he works around the circuit. He goes, I just worked with this guy a year ago, and now he's in Madison Square Garden with Carl Anthony Towns. He can't believe it, right? Yeah, he said we were entertaining 200 people in a VFW hall, and now look at him at the Garden. So, no, I think it's a great thing. I don't know why Meltzer said that. It's not overuse. And I think that if you're WWE, you're smart with it, right? Danhausen's going to be on SmackDown on Raw. He'll have one appearance each just for the comedic value. And then he'll just kind of go away. He won't be on four segments a night, every Raw and every SmackDown. I mean, but while the iron's hot, I think you do it. But then you'll have like the one segment like R-Truth has had for years.
Yeah. Again, doing the backstage thing every once in a while, having a match, you know, from all the backstage shenanigans that happen. I mean, it's not like they're going to put the World Heavyweight Championship on Danhausen anytime soon, right? Like, no, we're not doing that. We're not opening the show. We're not closing the show with Danhausen. He plays a role, and he plays his role so well. And to your point, I'm so excited for him. And I don't know why. It felt like he should have been perfect for AEW, and I don't know if it's because he was a Punk guy, so they kind of froze him out after all that happened at Wembley a couple of years ago. Who knows why? And I was skeptical for someone like Danhausen and his gimmick to exist in the world of WWE as, right? But he's found a way. He's found a way to make it happen, which is, you can't help but feel good for the performer that he has found his way to the largest promotion, and he's been able to make a difference in that promotion. And he's so over where, I'll tell you this, if he had zero segments on Monday Night Raw, the question would be, what's wrong with Danhausen? Where was Danhausen? How come he wasn't on the show?
Yeah, well, that would be dynamite. That's how they do business, right? It's coming off a hot pay-per-view. All of a sudden, you don't see the participants anymore. So I like what I saw. And by the way, He's a funny character, and also can work, as we saw in that matchup against JD McDonagh. And then he goes to the back and he pulls a lever, and all of a sudden here comes Carl Anthony Towns. And all of a sudden we got the next Ernie Ladd. All of a sudden he's out there and he's all of 6'9". And as you know, because you're a basketball guy like I am, as awkward as a ball player as you'll watch, right? You'll see, see the production. You look at the box score like, oh, 21-10, huh? But he's so strange, awkward kind of basketball player, herky jerky. But in wrestling, perfect. Perfect. Oh. Choke slams.
Great choke slams. 10 out of 10. No notes. No notes. Yeah. That was all you could ask for Carl Anthony Towns delivering those choke slams on Saturday night's main events. So we move on to number three here this week on GKW. And Dark Side of the Ring, because I think they've kind of run out of people to feature, have been doing more and more matches where they've kind of talked about, you know, behind the scenes of matches, and they've asked fans. So we're going to ask and discuss this right now. Is there a match you would like to see a Dark Side of the Ring episode on?
I feel like they've covered everything. Now, I can give you some deep dives, but the only problem is with some of those deep dives, those people are dead. That's the thing. Okay, let me just give you one that's obscure. Actually, it's on YouTube if you want to see it. It is Ox Baker in Cleveland. Ox Baker was the guy with the heart punch. He had his hand wrapped up. He hit you in the heart, and then you'd go down. And so that he was a heel. Ox Baker, big mustache, bald guy. And so he's in Cleveland against Ernie Ladd, the aforementioned Ernie Ladd. And he keeps hitting Ernie in the chest, the heart punch, keeps hitting him. And fans in Cleveland rioted, and they threw chairs in the ring. And you see Ox running through the aisle trying to get out of there because the fans want to rush the ring to be able to help Ernie because they thought he was killing Ernie. If you keep hitting me in the heart, you're going to kill him. So the fans in Cleveland, it's on YouTube. It's like a three-minute clip. But it's so obscure that I don't think Dark Side of the Ring could do it because both guys are dead. That's a problem. We know everything we know about Owen. All right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've seen that chapter and verse. We saw Wendy Richter, the first screw job we saw was Wendy Richter being screwed by a masked Fabulous Moolah at the Garden. You remember this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where Moolah cinches up a fast count 1-2-3. Moolah is the women's champion because Wendy Richter didn't want to do business. Because Vince was like, hey, I need you to lose. And Wendy was like, I'm not doing that. I'm rocking wrestling. It's me and Lou and Cindy Lauper. We're not doing that. And she's like, and Vince's like, okay, no problem. Moolah, put a mask on. Cinch it up. Quick count, 1-2-3. We know that story. I feel like we don't have any stories right now that we already know. I think we know them all.
And I guess what I kind of came up with is probably just even a little out of the Dark Side of the Ring motif, but it kind of feels like if they're transitioning, it feels like they're just telling more true stories of what happened behind matches instead of like, oh, and when the series started, it's like, oh, you love this guy, but here are the troubling things that happened behind the scenes. And the series has been going on long enough, they're running out of stories to tell. So I guess what I would like is... And I think you could actually probably take a couple of matches from this card, but at WrestleMania 30, obviously the biggest shock was Brock Lesnar going over Undertaker and ending the streak.
Okay.
I would, and it's probably not salacious or scandalous as some of these other ones can be, but the one they just did with the death match with Samoa Joe, like, I don't think that was salacious and scandalous either. It's just kind of a true look behind the scenes.
Necro Butcher, right?
Yeah. Yes, yeah, with Necro Butcher, yes. So, you know, like, when did they decide? Was Brock okay? You could tell the stories of, because I think Undertaker was pretty one point in this match. Like, I think there's enough layers to Brock Lesnar ending the streak that if I had to pick a match to see a Dark Side of the Ring episode on, I would like to see that. And again, going with even more WrestleMania 30, I would like the true story of how much... of the Bryan, the Daniel Bryan push was actually fans, how much of it was actually planned of, oh, we're going to get some heat on this guy and then really put him over WrestleMania 30. Because I don't think that was in the cards. I don't think they were going to put him over that. And also folded into that was the CM Punk controversy of him walking out after that Royal Rumble earlier that year. And I just think the run-up to WrestleMania 30 capped off with some of the matches that happened with WrestleMania 30 could be an interesting Dark Side of the Ring episode on, even though if it doesn't really stay true to what the original intentions of this series were.
You also need the both participants, or at least one. You can't get either.
No. So, that's the problem, yeah.
So what if I give you Dark Side of DX and I give you the New Age Outlaws who are available? There are non-WWE performers.
Yeah, I think so, especially with all the stuff with China and the fallout with her. Yeah, that could be a really good episode.
No Triple H, no Shawn, but at least you get two of the members to talk about. Are they willing to be able to go deep diving into Shawn Michaels' drug abuse?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the problem, I guess, is that they're both seemingly still so close. Like, I doubt you're getting the good stuff there. Because if Sean doesn't want it to be talked, like anything they want to talk about, they will run it by Sean and Hunter first.
Have we seen, let's see. See, a lot of these people that I would love is like the deep dive on a Miss Elizabeth, where it started and how it ended with Lex Luger. Luger's alive.
Because
they were together, Luger and Miss Elizabeth at the time. Randy's gone. The genius Lanny Poffo's gone. It's hard to tell those stories if you don't have all of the components, at least several of the components.
Yeah, the first person perspective. Yeah.
Yeah. Jeff Jarrett's story was fine, even without Dixie Carter, because he had all these different people, so it worked, right? You got people that have died, and you don't, and also people who have died that was around the story, it's hard to tell that full story.
Yeah, I think it really is. And I think that's why they're struggling to find, because they've had success with the series, and they're just now struggling to find more stories to keep the series alive. Because, like, this thing is successful. People like it. How do we keep it alive? Because they've already told so many, to find how many ever it is, 8 episodes every season. I think that's difficult to do. The series has probably gone on longer than they even possibly dreamed that it would.
Do you need another Hulk Hogan doc?
Not really.
You seen it, didn't you? You saw the whole thing? So the story's a story.
Yeah, I don't think you need anything on him. I mean, if HBO didn't have, which I thought was really well done, on Andre, like, you could do one on Andre, but like, whatever Dark Side of the Ring is going to do is never going to match up to the Andre doc, where they kind of obviously dug into a lot of the pain that he was dealing with as a performer, that he masked with, you know, his alcohol abuse. So I just don't, this is a compliment. Like, they've done such a good job with the stories. They just, I don't know what else there's left to tell that's compelling, because they've done such a good job. And as much as I would love for the series to continue, maybe it's just best that they kind of go out on top, and instead of trying to cobble together stories that don't really fit what they have been trying to accomplish with it.
I think it's fair. Like, there's been some things I know that you've laughed at over the last couple of years, and there's some that I was interested in, some I just haven't
watched. Yeah.
But they've had so many episodes that they have filled out 24 hours of programming on Vice. It's right there on your dial. It's like, it's right there on the... And you can see all, like, boy, the whole day of Dark Side, huh? Oh, okay, great. More Jake Roberts, thanks.
Yeah, Grizzly. I'm even trying to think of, like, somewhat controversial figures from today. Like, eventually, would I like to see a Dark Side of the Ring on what truly happened with CM Punk and AEW? Yeah. Are we ever actually going to get that info? No. Same thing with Cody and AEW. But we're never actually going to get that information unless the people involved actually want that information out there. And that's still years down the line. Like, they're not going to do that while they're active performers now. It just doesn't make any sense.
It would be like the Young Bucks on one side. Tony Khan would not talk about it because I think he's sealed. He's not supposed to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But in the locker room, maybe former AEW people could talk about it. But does it work without Punk? And,
no.
And also, who are Punk guys? It was hard to tell because you had all these shoot interviews, right? Remember when in the ring, Hangman Page is face-to-face with CM Punk. Nobody wants you here. Eddie Kingston, nobody wants you here. I don't know what's real and what's fake about that. I guess you have to wait a few years to get a documentary like that.
Yeah, it's a documentary I'd like to see, but like you said, it's years away from being told. Years away from being told.
If they close the doors on it, Gabe, I think I'd be okay with it because I got plenty to go back and watch now.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just an uphill battle, I think, with Dark Side of the Ring. We move on to our news and notes this week. And what's interesting is Bayley. So her contract is going to be coming up apparently by the end of the year. Don't know if they're going to add injury time, but Bayley has not added, she's not signed a new contract, which has led to speculation of, oh, maybe she's going to join her very good friend, Mercedes Moné, over in AEW. AEW has reportedly had interest in Bayley, and why not? I honestly think this would be a great move for Bayley. I don't know what else there's left for her to accomplish in WWE.
So her matchup that she had in which she lost to Lyra Valkyria, first of all, I thought it was a good match.
Yep.
Because there is there's something about the struggle, Gabe. There is some kind of quality in the struggle that they had. That's not necessarily like the smoothest match, but it didn't have to be. It was a grudge match.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about it with the blood from Lyra, maybe a broken nose, maybe not. But just the struggle between the two, there was an art form for me. And then to see Lyra win, and then the way that Lyra ended it, where, you know, that move on the stairs, I'm like, is that how you're writing Bayley off after all these years? There's no more on the bone for these two, nothing. That's how you're going to do Bayley after all these years? Bayley, in these interviews that we've been seeing with Chris Van Vliet and others, it's not a lack of confidence. It just feels like she said something along the lines of, out of all the four horsewomen, I feel like I'm fourth. I feel like I haven't accomplished what I wanted to accomplish. And I'm like, I guess there's something to be said for that. I think that might be true. She feels like she's the steamboat on the Hogan card. I'll put it that way. Like,
yeah. Second,
it's like what Seth Rollins said about himself. Like, I'll never mm-hmm. be the, I'll only be the second or third guy. So if she goes to AEW, I feel like she could get lost in the sauce. There could be a matchup with her and Mercedes, but then what? Right? So I don't know. I just think that if that's the way that she ends her WWE career, it's kind of cruel. It's not great.
Especially the way she's like giving back to wrestling.
Yeah.
With every thing that she's been doing, trying to help train and do for the next generation. But we'll have to wait and see as that contract situation will sort itself out. Meanwhile, Sammy Guevara. So he tweeted out, and there have been different reports of it. He tweeted out new bio, and there was no mention of AEW, which made people think he deleted AEW. But then there was another report saying AEW was never in his Twitter or X bio. So I don't know. Speaking of being lost in the shuffle, this is a guy that has just been lost in the shuffle for a very long time in AEW and ROH. And I can't see WWE being interested. His wife, Tay Mello, had asked for her release back in 2025, a release that was not granted. So I don't know what goes on from here. I know he was once promising. I once thought he could be a world champ in AEW, and now that seems nearly impossible.
So here's a guy here I thought was immature, kind of indie mature, worked with Chris Jericho. I thought that he pulled the nose up on his career. When he teamed with Dustin Rhodes, it was kind of strange, right? Well, we're both from Texas, so we'll be a tag team. Like, okay.
Okay.
All right. And I thought that that was good for Sammy to have someone that's professional and mature like Dustin. Dustin gets injured, and Sammy still has kind of just been lingering on ROH and on and off. You know, I don't want to see him in NXT or WWE, even though I know he's a terrific talent. I would like for him to get a hold of his career and figure out what he wants to do. He could be one of those guys in the indies that could make a mint if he wanted to. But with AEW is one of the pillars, one of the original guys.
He used to be. Mm-hmm.
He's just a lost soul out there. And I think a lot of that comes from his lack of maturity.
And then finally, in news and notes, we have a little bit of clarity from WWE as to what they're planning to do stateside next spring when they run WrestleMania overseas in Saudi Arabia. They are going to be running NXT Stand and Deliver and a AAA show in Madison Square Garden, not the big arena, but one of the smaller ballrooms that they have inside MSG. And then they're also going to have a watch party in New York City. So apparently this is their plan to try to thwart whatever AEW or independent companies are going to try to do stateside that they typically do around Mania. They want to have watch parties everywhere, and they're going to run New York on WrestleMania weekend.
So are we running Potawatomi in Milwaukee? Are we going Otto? No?
Well, we can reach out and see if they'll have us back for WrestleMania and have some fun there. Look, I don't think it matters what WWE does in the States. The people, like, and we'll use the example of Brian, because Brian is the one from GKW that's represented us and has gone to the last couple of Manias. His credential was denied by WWE. Could not go inside for WrestleMania. Now, he still went out, and he had a blast going to all the independent shows. So there are plenty of people like him that wherever the independent shows are going to be, that's where they're going to go that weekend. They're not going to give a rip about the watch party, and certainly still watch, but they want to go watch all the independent wrestling that they possibly can. And there's still space for that to happen, I think, in the States.
Gabe, can we talk about this right now? If you're in New York and you're watching WrestleMania from Saudi in that theater, and then there's a show in front of you, that's a long day. You watch on the screen, and then, oh, by the way, here comes this second-rate wrestling that you guys sit there and watch. So that's just a long day for the wrestling fan to sit in that seat, in that theater, the entire time. If I'm AEW, I still run in Jacksonville, Chicago, Los Angeles, whatever. I still do that, because if you have a show against whatever they've got, you mentioned, like, it's AAA and NXT. Actually, I think NXT should have two shows. I think the day one should be Stand, and the next one should be Deliver.
Deliver?
I think
this is NXT Stand.
Welcome, everybody, to Deliver. The second night of Stand and Deliver, here's Deliver.
Okay. This is deliver.
Yeah, so I think AEW should still run something. And I want our guy, Brian, to be able to be part of whatever the indie, wherever the indies go. Maybe the indies go to New York, and that's where Broitz goes with his, you know, with his blazer, his GKW blazer.
Just gets in wherever he wants, man. Sure. Just gets in. He's great. He's fantastic at it. So yeah, I think something will still happen. All right, to close it out, what did you have for your matches of the week?
So we should mention Kevin Knight, should we not?
Kevin Knight and Darby Allin last night. Yes, I would say that was a – and they had to do the schmozzy finish because they want to protect Darby and still build up Kevin so he's got to win and retain the TNT championship going into his big matchup against Kenny. So you knew it was going to have a little bit of a wonky finish. It wasn't going to be super clean, but – regardless of that, that match shows you what he should be able to do with the, even though we have the obvious outcome with Kenny Omega over the weekend and Redemption.
Anything in WWE that stood out to you?
You kind of mentioned it. I just liked the nature of Lyra versus Bayley, of because sometimes when you have someone turn heel like that, you don't get the feeling of the grudge match, right? That's what I really like. Now, of course, they didn't follow up with it all on Monday Night Raw. But for Lyra to come out and have this complete character change and to have the aggression that she did, I feel that can get lost sometimes in wrestling, whether it's AEW or WWE. So, again, maybe the match wasn't the cleanest, but I enjoyed the spirit of what they were trying to accomplish in that match of, hey, this is somebody who now hates Bayley, and she is letting me know through her actions in that match that she hates Bayley.
Sammy and Gunther against CM Punk and Cody Rhodes. It actually was a faster match and more of a sprint than I expected for four veterans. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect it to be that fast, and it deserved to have top billing, I think, for match of the week from Saturday night's main event. You're at the Garden, man. You got to put your best foot forward. It's New York, and I thought that all four men accounted themselves very, very well. So I like that a lot.
Just a quick pause.
Okay.
Because then they, with I think it was at Fanatics Fest, because that was going on all weekend in New York, and that's when they eventually announced we're going to get Gunther versus Otis.
Yeah.
And Gunther comes out on stage with Triple H. Like, and Gunther's making really good points, and Triple H's like, oh, you pushed a man to his breaking point. Dude, I know it's wrestling logic, but there are some times where even I can't get over it. Hunter, you had an official who pulled a referee out of a ring with some pretty significant stakes attached to it. And all this gets rewarded with a match and you're on Aldis's side. Like this is poor management. Like this is, you are not doing a good man job of managing your people, Hunter. That's all I'm saying. And I know it's wrestling logic, but okay, Aldis, you know, Gunther might be a pain in the ass, but Aldis 100% overstepped getting involved in a match and pulling a referee out of the ring.
I 100% agree. I also think it's kind of weird wrestling logic when in Albany, New York, you have Aldis make the announcement. It's like, you know what? Sorry, Gunther. We're still going to go with Cody against Punk. And then Aldis gets attacked. And then the following Monday, we hear from Pierce like, hey, Gunther, you should have just waited. The stipulation still stands. If you win a Saturday night's main event with Sammy, you could be part of the four-way. How is it that you get attacked and you keep the stipulation intact? What is that? How is that? Like, you beat me up, Gabe. We have and I had to present to you. I'm like, well, fuck that stipulation. No. You remember, you beat my ass. You put me to sleep. So it just, the wrestling logic is very strange in WWE. We talk about AEW and some of their stuff. WWE with those that stipulation, how does that still stand? Now, of course, we're not going to get the four-way. But
yeah,
beat up and he goes, yeah, let the four-way go through.
Yeah, the whole wrestling logic of the thing to get us here. Interesting to say the least over in WWE. If you happen to miss our interview earlier today or want to go back and look at any of the other older interviews we have, make sure you just check out the YouTube page, youtube.com/@goodkarmawrestling. Comment, subscribe, let us know how you feel about the show. Always love to hear some feedback. We've got Redemption this weekend. We've got SummerSlam the weekend after that, big month of August, and we know we're going to be talking about it all right here next week on GKW.